From KUAZ News in Tucson, I'm Julie Buronk, and this is Arizona Spotlight. A group of developers, investors, politicians, and community activists are proposing a private-public group to oversee efforts to revitalize Tucson's lagging downtown core. We'll talk with Larry Hecker about this Tucson downtown partnership. The voter-approved smoking ban went into effect earlier this week across the state. Today, a report on how one area restaurant owner prepared to post the no-smoking sign at midnight Tuesday morning. And two music stories, one about a mariachi instructor at a local high school, and one about a rock and roll icon who remains a legend despite her short-lived career. That's coming up on Arizona Spotlight. The Tucson Regional Economic Opportunities recently released a regional economic blueprint with five thrust areas. One of them is to improve the local economy in downtown Tucson. But many in our city have become frustrated with the lack of progress in downtown revitalization and believe a new effort should be made. A group in the private sector wants to establish a partnership with several existing downtown organizations to oversee these efforts. The goal is to create a proper downtown. Attorney Larry Hecker is one of those proposing the group. He joins me now in our studios. Larry, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Well, tell me, how did you become involved in this project?
Well, in addition to being a downtown property owner for over 30 years, I served as the chair of TRIO's Economic Blueprint Committee. And during the course of preparing the blueprint and in interviewing people and talking to people, it became very clear that there's a general acknowledgement and agreement that a vibrant, multi-purpose downtown is essential to the economic prosperity of this community and the maintenance and enhancement of our heart and soul.
Is this project being modeled after the RTA?
There have been some very strong indications that this community is ready to work together toward a common goal. The RTA is a perfect example. The 2004 bond campaign is another example where people realize that by working together, we can accomplish so much for so many.
And who is spearheading this group?
Well, it's sort of, there's been a group of different organizations that have come together behind it. Certainly TRIO has been involved, the Downtown Tucson Alliance, there's a stakeholders group, the downtown merchants, downtown restaurants, downtown property owners, all say that the time is right for people to work together in a collaborative partnership.
When you say public and private, who specifically will be involved in the public sector and then in the private sector?
Well, a lot of the details are still to be worked out, but my opinion is that it will and should include representation from the city council, for example. The city manager's office needs to be very closely aligned with the work of the partnership. Pima County, I'd like to see a member of the Board of Supervisors participate in the partnership, as well as the county administrator's office. But again, recognizing that this is a regional effort, it would hopefully include TRIO, it would include business interests that extend beyond downtown itself, some of our larger employers recognize the importance of a vital downtown to their success.
And how will Councilwoman Nina Traceoff be involved?
Well, Nina has been very instrumental in bringing the group together. It was a group that was meeting, providing counsel and advice to her, that joined with some of these other organizations in spearheading this effort. Nina is the representative of Ward 6, which encompasses most of downtown. So she's a likely representative to serve on the board from the city council.
And how will the group be structured and how will it be funded?
These are issues that still need to be dealt with. The group will be inclusive. It will be representative. All of the downtown stakeholders need to be represented, but we need to reach beyond downtown to include the community at large. The arts community, certainly, the development community, economic development. These are all critical components to a successful effort.
How was this idea really born? Did it come out of this feeling of lack of progress in revitalizing downtown, that something needs to be done to get it you know, a new effort needs to be made?
I'm not sure that it was the lack of progress as much as it is the realization that by working together toward a common goal, we can accomplish so much. And I think that was what the TRIO blueprint concluded, that downtown revitalization is important to everyone who lives in this region. And there needs to be a public-private partnership that will serve as a catalyst to that revitalization process.
Well, Larry, thank you so much for coming in. I'm sure we'll be speaking with you further when more details come to light.
My pleasure.
Health inspectors have begun enforcing the state's new smoking ban, which took effect on Tuesday. The smoking ban was approved by voters back in November. It prohibits smoking in all restaurants, bars, and other indoor public places and within 20 feet of entrances to businesses. In order to accommodate their smoking customers, business owners were rushing to add outdoor patios and make other necessary changes right up until the final moments before the ban went into effect. Tony Paniagua reports.
The Old Father Inn on Ina Road provides a place to have a drink, grab a bite to eat, or play a game of pool. You also used to be able to smoke in here, but like thousands of similar places around the state, cigarettes are prohibited now. If you want to light up, you'll have to go to the outdoor patio. In this case, it's been extended and improved.
Overall, how much money have you spent on this project?
$15,000 to $20,000.
And what do you think about that?
It was an expense that I wasn't, you know, thinking of a year ago, but now that it's here, I'm dealing with it, and I got to take care of my customers.
Brian Bouffard bought this business about a year ago, but the last few weeks have been particularly hectic. He's been keeping track of the rules regarding Proposition 206. Voters approved it in November, but the smoking ban did not go into effect until this week.
April 6th is when they posted all the rules and regulations on their website, and the state legislature signed off on it last Friday. And if you were to do something prior to that, you might shoot yourself in the foot because they could have changed it and you would have had to go back and redo what you did. So the fact that that didn't become officially law until last Friday, I'm really kind of upset they didn't give us more time.
But the pressure is on because Bouffard doesn't get more time. We follow him as he walks the length of the patio and shows us some of the changes. We begin with the fan above the patio door that leads into the restaurant.
This blower here is designed to blow straight down so that if the wind can't blow the smoke inside every time you open the door, it'll shut on and off, and that'll meet the requirements from keeping the smoke from entering the building.
And what have you done on the rest of the patio here?
Down here, we extended out the patio 4 feet and put in some high tops that we're still working on right here. Another one there, and we're going to put some tables against this wall with some TV monitors up top. And this would be a bar. It'll be just a beer tub bar. We'll be able to service beer to the customers that migrate out into the patio area.
Carlos Corral has been a bartender here for a dozen years, but this week will be different, and he knows it. For one, businesses won't even be able to display ashtrays inside for customers to see.
Are you nervous, excited, apprehensive?
What would be... All of those, all mixed emotions.
Corral knows most of the customers here, but there are always new patrons in the crowd. He hopes everyone's nice and understanding.
Who's going to be in charge of telling people, sorry, you can't smoke?
That's me. That's my job. I get to be Mr. Good Guy / Bad Guy. I'm actually a little curious to see how that'll go in myself. I think people will be a little upset at first, but like everything else, they'll get used to it.
How will you approach them?
I'm going to be as nice as I can about it. But we're enforcing this. It is the law, and we have to maintain by the standards.
Randy Durham is an aircraft technician who visits the Old Father Inn 2 or 3 times a week. He's been smoking for more than a decade.
Well, I'll step outside for a while, but then I'll probably want to stay home and instead of coming up here, and then I'm sure after a while it's going to change my habit, that's for sure. I really don't know.
And what do you think this is going to do overall to smokers? Do you think it'll encourage some people to give up the habit, perhaps?
In a way, it's going to force them. It's going to force them. It's either don't come up here and socialize or change your habits. And I think you'll see some people change their habits, me included.
Arthur Smith is a retired university professor and a non-smoker. He enjoys the off-track betting at this facility, but he hasn't been happy about the smoke.
For some of us, it's a really good thing. As an older guy, I used to smoke. I'm not against smoking as such, but I think it'll make many, many people more comfortable. here at these inns and bars and what have you. And if they can figure out a way to have a smoking area, I think everybody will be accommodated.
That's what Brian Buffard is trying to accomplish. He owns the building but leases the property, so he's grateful he at least had some options to comply with the new law.
There's a lot of places in town that don't have any room. They don't have anywhere to expand to. And they're going to force their customers to go out into the parking lot to stand by their car and have a cigarette.
Buffard says state inspectors will charge smokers a $250 fine if they're caught breaking the law. Businesses will also be slapped with a $250 fine the first time, but subsequent violations will cost an additional $250 each. Bartender Carlos Corral says it's all part of a new chapter for the Old Father Inn and many other establishments around the state.
It's going to be a different change. I would say 98% of the people that come in here smoke. They cuss and they drink. I don't know, I think all three of those kind of go hand in hand.
But the rules of the game are changing, and despite their concerns, those who work at this lounge are optimistic about the future. They predict an initial drop in business, but eventually they hope to attract even more people in a healthier environment. The question is, how many new customers? And will they make up for the smokers who are expected to stay away? For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Tony Paniagua.
For more information about the new law, you can log on to smokefreearizona.org. Up next, a profile of a mariachi teacher at Pueblo High School and the music of Janis Joplin, as performed by a few cast members of the play Love Janis, now on stage in Phoenix. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. Last week, Tucson was filled with mariachi music at the Tucson International Mariachi Conference. For 25 years, the conference has been a major player when it comes to influencing the direction of mariachi and Valle Folklorico. Nearly 1,000 students from across the country and Canada came to the El Pueblo to learn from professionals. In some cases, these mariachi teachers have given up careers as touring musicians to teach full-time. One of them is Johnny Contreras. Weekend America's Julia Barton stopped by his classroom.
Johnny Contreras says he's never had a problem imagining his future self.
It's funny, my mom pulled out an old book that I made when I was in first grade. It was like one of those, you know, a book made out of, cardboard and some, you know, colored paper. And it's got yarn through the binding, you know, and it's basically what I'm going to be when I grow older book. And I remember, too, I remember like it was yesterday, I had a bunch of friends and they drew firemen and they drew astronauts and they drew, you know, a spaceship going to the moon, and that's what they wanted to be. And what I drew is a stage with lights, and here I am like a stick figure holding a guitar and singing and playing.
Johnny wanted to be a rock star like in Kiss, but his family didn't listen to that kind of music. Every weekend, Johnny's dad would sit in the living room with his giant turntable / 8-track console, listening to Mexican music like Mariachi Vargas de Tecalitlan. It wasn't Kiss, but mariachis have cool uniforms too. Fitted riding pants with silver buttons up the side, short jackets, boots, and ties. They're called trajes, and as soon as he could play guitar, Johnny got to wear one in school.
We had like about 10 to 11 members in that group. Pretty much basically trying to emulate Vargas. That's kind of the whole thing, is whenever Vargas does, just about everybody else tries to emulate, because they're the You know, they're the kings. They're the best group in the world.
After finishing school, Contreras became a professional guitarist. He moved to L.A. and then Chicago, playing the mariachi circuit, which is weirder than you might think. He was in a 12-piece band, and they played for Poles and Puerto Ricans, visiting dignitaries and backyard baptisms. They played almost every day of the week.
I never thought I'd say this, but there was days I'd come home and I'd just have my guitar and I'd be like, I'd kind of toss it to the side and just be like, I don't even want to see that thing for a day or two because I'm just like, ah. But, you know, it's funny because then anytime a call would come in, hey, we got a gig tomorrow, you know, you on? Yeah, I'm on. Sure, I'm on.
Contreras was living his dream up on stage all the time, basking in applause and getting free food at gigs. Then he got the call from an old friend in Tucson. Could he come back and be a teacher?
I told him, when is it, you know, when do you need a mariachi instructor? And he's like, well, when can you get here? I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, when does school start? He's like, next week. I was like, oh my gosh.
Contreras found he didn't even have to think about it for long. His fellow band members in Chicago said they wish they could be teachers too. Plus, Johnny would be going home, even if it meant spending most of his days here, in a windowless 20-by-10-foot room at Pueblo High School.
There's an FCA meeting right after school day in room 238.
Contreras has more than 100 students in his music classes here, learning the traditional mariachi instruments like violin, guitar, trumpet, harp, and Mexican instruments like the bass guitarrón. Only 16 students get to play in his performing group, Mariachi Aztlán. They spend an hour every school day plus two nights a week working up a repertoire that they play at concerts around town.
Guys, long bows, very. You gotta really use all your bow. It's gotta sound grand. This part's gotta sound like an orchestra.
Sometimes things get in the way of perfection at Pueblo High School. The group's next after-school rehearsal had to be canceled because someone threw a firecracker into the boys' restroom and blew up the toilet. The school made everyone go home early. Mariachi Aztlán has been trying to get ready for a performance at this weekend's conference.
They're not here to get paid. They're not here to I make so much an hour, and that's what I'm here to get paid for. They're here because they love playing the music.
Señoras y señores, we want a big, big round of applause para recibir al Mariachi Aztlán de la Pueblo High School, conducted by my friend John Contreras.
It's Noche de las Estrellas, a concert that informally kicks off Mariachi Week in Tucson. The mayor is in the audience. 16 kids line up on stage in dark blue trajes. The violinists have to angle their bows, not to hit the brims of their gray sombreros. Clouds of rosin rise into the air. The band's director is off to the right under the stage lights, holding his guitar.
Man, that makes my heart just swell up big time to be able to play alongside these kids. And they're like, these grins on their faces, and they're like, wow, you know, they're playing on these big stages. And that for me is the payoff. That for me is like to see these kids perform and to be alongside them too and, you know, perform right with them. That's more than anybody could pay me probably to teach and to do this type of music.
In Tucson, I'm Julia Barton.
Julia Barton's report originally aired on American Public Media's Weekend America, which you can hear Saturday afternoons at 1 o'clock right here on KUAZ. She has one of the most famous voices in rock history. Gritty and soulful, she could sing the blues like no other. Some 36 years since her death, Janis Joplin remains a legend. And although her career only lasted a few short years, she's considered an icon. A play called Love, Janis recently made a stop in Tucson and is now running in Phoenix. It reveals a new side to the queen of rock and roll. Love, Janis is inspired by a book of the same name written by Janis's younger sister, Laura, and is based on letters Janis wrote home to her family from the time she left school in Texas and hitchhiked to San Francisco in pursuit of her rock and roll dreams. Directed by Randall Myler, Love Janice is made up of a series of monologues taken from these letters, played by a talking Janice, and part concert that shows Janice's onstage persona, played by a singing Janice.
My name is Kathy Richardson, and I play Janice Joplin.
I like to do a song of great social and political import. It goes like this. Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends. So, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? That's it.
How did you prepare for the role of playing Janice Joplin? Because those are some big, big shoes to fill.
When I first started doing the show, I caught me by surprise. They approached me about doing it. I was a singer in my own band in Chicago, and I was doing the exact same thing that Janice was doing. I was playing in clubs and trying to, you know, make it in the music business. And so when they approached me about doing the show, I was like, oh, I don't do theater. I don't sound like Janice Joplin. There's probably other people that would be way better at this than me. And they said, well, we just want you to try it. So when I had the opportunity, and it was very, very daunting. You know, I mean, it is huge shoes to fill. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I need to learn as much about her as I possibly can.
You don't actually try to mimic Janice Joplin. You don't try to sing like her. You just try to...
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I am definitely affecting my voice a great deal when I do Janice. I mean, I put a lot of grit on my voice to do the role. Obviously, you have to. I mean, that was one of her main trademarks, was that she had a very raspy sound. So,
do you do her laugh?
Yes. Oh. Well, I'm a mean woman. Yeah, I don't mean no one man, no good, no. I'm a mean woman, oh, I don't mean no one man, no good. Well, 'cause you see, well, I just treat them like I wants to, honey. Treat some honey like I should. No, 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 no. Yeah, well.
Well, I read that the play reveals a sort of a softer side of Janice Joplin that not a lot of people know about.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
When you think Janice Joplin, there are certain keywords that pop into mind. You know, whiskey,
so
raspy voice, rock and roll, wild woman, you know, and you don't even really think about it. She had a family and a mom and a dad, and like we all do, you know. So it's really interesting when you read her letters to find out how normal she was, and how she was very, very smart, very thoughtful. She cared a great deal what her parents thought about her and what she was doing. She really wanted their approval. Call me B, you can call me Evo.
I'm Joel Hoekstra. I play guitar and love Janice.
What do you think it is about Janice Joplin that really draws a crowd? I mean, she only had a 4-year career, but to this day, she is an icon. She's a legend.
It's really probably the personal things that people attach themselves to, and a lot of them have just become stereotypes and memories inside their own heads of her.
Do you think a lot of people, too, can relate to her, that sadness that she had and... I guess that realness that she kind of...
Yeah, the spectrum of emotions that she went through in her experience, she was the poster child for that era. She hit people on a lot of levels, you know, so much more than music, although musically, she is maybe the greatest rock singer of all time.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a DC.
I'm Lisa Ote. I play keyboards in Love Janice.
Do you think Love Janice is a celebration of her life, not just her music?
Absolutely. And you put the two characters together, you put Kathy and Marissa, who's a speaking Janice, put them together, and it's like, you know, two halves. You have the speaking Janice who shows us the raw and vulnerable side, and then you have the stage persona of Kathy, who is just, you know, she fills the whole room just with her spirit, and then she starts singing. And so together, they're a great combination.
Yeah. La, 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 la.
Come on.
La, 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 la. You know the words. La, 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 bother ever again.
Love Janice, presented by the Arizona Theater Company, is currently running through May 19th in Phoenix at the Herberger Theater. For ticket information, call the box office at 602-256-6995. To hear Kathy's full rendition of Turtle Blues and Me and Bobby McGee recorded right here in our KUAZ studios, just log on to KUAZ.org. And you can also check out Kathy Richardson's band at kathyrichardson.com. And now here's Mark McLemore with the Arizona Spotlight Arts Calendar.
This weekend, you can celebrate Cinco de Mayo. There's a fiesta happening at Kennedy Park, as well as the 27th annual Cinco de Mayo 10K Run and 2-Mile Health Walk. The Tucson Folk Festival is this weekend in El Presidio Park downtown, with over 90 local musical acts, workshops, food, and much more. Also happening, the Tucson Hog Rally, as Harley-Davidson owners celebrate their favorite hobby downtown. On stage, it's the first week for Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men at the Beowulf Alley Theater Company downtown. Saturday night is the first performance of Bell, Book, and Candle at the Live Theater Workshop stage. That's on East Speedway. The Top Hat Theater Club will present an evening with two cartoonists called The Art of Comedy this Sunday night, in addition to presenting Come On Jeeves Friday, Saturday, and a Sunday matinee. With this look at what's happening around town, this is Mark McLemore for Arizona Spotlight.
Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. A portion of the music heard on today's program was written and performed by Calexico. Audio archives of Arizona Spotlight programs are available online at kuaz.org. Podcasts are also available. I'm Julie Burock.